Good evening and welcome to the local news. I'm April Lewis, reporting for KMUD from our studios in Southern Humboldt. Before tonight's news, I'd like to bring up KMUD Spring Drive. Please support KMUD during our spring membership drive, April 13th to the 22nd. Your donation helps us broaden our programming and keep you up to date with local news. Go to kmud.org and click the donate button during our fun drive, April 13th to the 22nd. You can also send a check or cash to our mailbox. It's P.O. Box 135 in Redway, 95560. Again, that's P.O. Box 135 in Redway, zip code 95560. We'd really appreciate any amount you can give. Every day it costs about $1,600 to run the station. That's $66 every hour, or about a dollar per minute. Our CPB funding isn't coming back anytime soon, as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has officially dissolved, and now our members account for one quarter of our funding. To keep our news broadcast going, we need your help. Again, you can go to kmud.org to donate. I'd like to emphasize that without this funding, without your donations, we will struggle to maintain emergency and breaking news coverage we have brought you in the past. That includes fire warnings. That includes coverage of North Mendocino and areas of Southern Humboldt with elevated fire risk, especially in this dry year. As news director, I would like nothing more than to bring you the most comprehensive, accurate, and up-to-date emergency coverage possible, but we need the staff and resources to make it happen. Please help us as we continue to provide this essential service. Please donate. The membership drive will be this month from the 13th to the 22nd. And we appreciate all of you who have given your money and time to help KMUD. And now to the newscast. We'll start with a rundown of today's top stories, followed by reporting from our news team. On this broadcast, we have coverage of the Eureka City Council meeting, the Chad Bianco meet and greet at Old Growth Cellars, and more. Welcome to the rundown. Yesterday, Judge William J. Lafferty gave the City of Eureka an assist in its efforts to evict the Humboldt Bay Social Club, a restaurant and venue located at the Samoa Airfield. The social club business is currently owned by Zephyr Hospitality, whose sole owner is Nicole Fryer. The judge dismissed Fryer's filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Attorneys for the city had filed an eviction lawsuit on December 2nd, which was argued successfully and resulted in Eureka being awarded rights to back rent still owed and the legal right to seize the property back from the social club. Fryer responded by filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Since a bankruptcy filing triggers an automatic stay for eviction notices during the entirety of bankruptcy proceedings, Fryer had several issues presenting her case, including failing to hire a lawyer, which is legally required to prosecute Chapter 11 proceedings. The social club published several inflammatory posts to social media while waiting for the judgment in recent weeks, including those attacking local journalists. In one Instagram post concerning a Lost Coast Outpost article from late March on eviction proceedings, Fryer stated, quote, "That is not reporting. That is narrative construction." She went on to state that the piece raises serious questions about editorial judgment, sourcing, and the decision to publish a partial narrative with real-world consequences. Unfortunately for Fryer, the judge did not agree with the substance of her statements. It is also highly irregular for plaintiffs in bankruptcy proceedings to comment publicly, especially in an inflammatory way. In Mendocino news, former Ukiah school teacher Matt Lefever has been charged with a misdemeanor count of annoying or molesting a child under the age of 18. Lefever was a journalist who had previously written for his own publication, Mendo Fever, which has since been shuttered. He was also formerly a frequent contributor to Redheaded Black Belt and the North Coast contributing editor for SF Gate. Arraignment for the case was on Thursday, and we'll keep you updated as it proceeds. In state news, the California Assembly Committee unanimously passed Assembly Bill 1729, which requires every state agency to develop and implement a telecommuting plan. The bill would end Governor Newsom's return-to-work requirement for state employees if passed. And now to in-depth reporting from our news team. First is Daniel Mintz with a report on pay hikes for the Eureka City Council.
Eureka voters may soon be weighing in on what the work of city leaders is worth, as a first step toward asking them to approve council member and mayor pay raises has been taken. At an April 7th special meeting, the City Council directed staff to draft an ordinance to place pay raises on the November 3rd election ballot. Though the exact numbers won't be determined until two public hearings are held, council members generally supported doubling their current pay of $500 a month and doing the same for the mayor, who now makes $625 a month. The city's charter needs to be changed for the pay hikes, necessitating voter approval. City Attorney Robert Black said the current council member and mayor pay rates have been in place for 38 years and are, quote, truly out of date. Councilmember Katie Moulton said low compensation could limit council candidacy.
I do have currently three jobs, and I also have a lot of support in my life. I'm married to a person with an income. I have in-laws who watch my kid. So I'm able to, you know, shuffle things around in order to make time for this. But my neighborhood is full of working families, and it's a challenge. And I think that for people to be fairly represented by somebody that really knows what it's like, you know, that that represents them, that we need to be able to compensate people for their time in a way that they can afford to do it. I'm lucky I can afford to do this job, and not everybody can afford the time to do it. And I want to see the people, the people in the second ward feel like they can, you know, they can make this a part of their service to the community.
Another aspect of potential ballot measure language is setting annual pay raises in line with cost of living increases. Black said state law has pay standards for charter government cities, which Eureka is, and allows raises of up to 5% a year. Speaking, quote, as another council member hustling three jobs, Councilmember Leslie Castellano, who is being termed out this year and won't be affected by any pay change, said raising pay is a nod to, quote, the sense of labor and responsibility to folks who are working class. Councilmember Mario Fernandez agreed, but advised limiting pay hikes to what's considered standard in other charter cities.
An increase, I feel, that's above what's already out there and established in other cities. It's just going to be like, whoa, what are you guys trying to give yourselves? And it's like, no, we're trying to bring it up to a point where it's going to work for you once I'm out of this role. So again, I would like to see that, but I don't know if any of us up here have that power to convey to the citizenry of Eureka to say, like, hey, let's make this a living wage job too. They might agree, but I don't know if politically or electorally it would come through to fruition.
Council member Scott Bauer said pay raises will be especially relevant for future council members, and they'll, quote, provide enough for them to survive because right now it doesn't do that for anybody. Further support for pay hikes came from Councilmember Renee Contreras-Deloach, who said current pay makes for almost a volunteer position, and if pay would be based on part-time hours at minimum wage, it would be $1,400 a month. Mayor Kim Burgell also supported the pay raises.
I think this is long overdue. You know, I think if you look at each individual person on this council schedule and how many hours they work a week on council, you would find that they're making below minimum wage. As the mayor, I think it is different. I was on council for 8 years, and I was very busy, very busy. And as mayor, I am very, very busy. There's always something more happening, and I think that there's a lot more to that than perhaps being on council, and so I support that as well.
The council directed staff to draft an ordinance doubling current pay rates for council members and the mayor and setting 5% as a maximum annual increase. That proposal will be up for public comment at an April 21st hearing. A second public hearing will be held in May, with final ballot measure language needing to be approved by June 16th. The pay issue hasn't been met with controversy yet, as there were no takers for a public comment period on it. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A bill to combat abuses in the staffing industry in California passed a key committee in the state Senate on Wednesday. Senate Bill 1032 would require staffing firms to register with the state and provide proof of insurance and financial capacity. State Senator Eloise Gomez-Reyes, the author of the bill, says it would make it harder for bad actors to evade payroll taxes, workers' compensation requirements, and basic labor protections.
This bill addresses this issue by establishing a clear oversight, real accountability, and required registration so staffing agencies are complying with the law before harm can occur.
The bill aims to protect legitimate staffing agencies, which can be undercut on price by fraudulent competitors. Attorney Jennifer Snyder is a former fraud prosecutor in the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office who represents the Partnership Organization for Workplace Ethics and Reform, or POWER. She testified in favor of the bill, which would create a publicly accessible registry for workers and employers.
The biggest block in any investigation is identifying the individuals who operate behind the anonymity of their company and who change entity names in order to shield them from being detected.
Lisa Lichty, CEO of Star Staffing in Petaluma, represents an industry group called California Staffing Professionals. She says a new regulatory structure would be a burden to staffing firms, which are already required to follow all labor laws.
Our biggest concerns about the bill as currently written is that it creates vague, new, and unnecessary requirements rather than enforcing current laws to address the problem.
The bill now heads to the State Senate Judiciary Committee. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Experts in healthcare policy are speaking out against further Medicaid cuts once Congress returns from its spring recess to work on a second budget reconciliation package. The legislation will fund the Iran war and the Department of Homeland Security. Last summer, Republicans cut $1 trillion from Medicaid in their reconciliation bill known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Joan Alker with the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University says she's concerned that the administration may use allegations of Medi-Cal fraud to justify further cuts.
The House Budget Chair Arrington has been very explicit that he'd like to see more Medicaid cuts. We're hearing a lot of rumors about this. So that is extremely concerning, and we will certainly be paying very close attention to that.
Alker says she fears that the Trump administration's focus on fraud is really an attempt to attack the president's political enemies in blue states, to distract voters from past Medicaid cuts, and to lay the groundwork for additional cuts. In January, the Centers for Medicaid Services sent a letter to Governor Gavin Newsom questioning Medi-Cal spending, noting that the in-home supportive services program grew almost 350% over the past decade. The state responded that the program has grown as the state successfully moved more older Californians into cost-effective home-based care, limiting spending on institutional care like nursing homes. Professor Andy Schneider with the Georgetown University McCourt School of Public Policy says in-home services allow more people to age in place.
The fact that IHSS spending has gone up, in the state's view, is testament to a successful rebalancing, one that in the past the federal government has encouraged.
Blue states have also been targeted in letters from the House Energy and Commerce Committee. 3 weeks ago, President Trump established a government-wide anti-fraud task force led by Vice President J.D. Vance and White House Advisor Stephen Miller. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Yesterday, secret warrants to seize more than 650,000 ballots by the Riverside County Sheriff's Department were made public by the Riverside County Superior Court. These warrants played a part in a controversial investigation over election fraud allegations, and Riverside County Superior Court Judge Gail O'Rain ordered that they be unsealed after media organizations sued to review the documents. This came shortly after the California Supreme Court halted the investigation pending a further review of the case. The ballots are from the Prop 50 special election from back in November of 2025, which was passed by voters at a 64% yes to a 35% no. Its passing has temporarily redrawn the state's congressional districts in response to partisan redistricting in Republican states. The agency claimed that they were investigating a complaint from a local watchdog election group, Riverside Election Integrity Team, alleging that there was a discrepancy in which approximately 45,800 additional votes were reported to the California Secretary of State. Current Riverside County Sheriff, as well as Republican gubernatorial candidate Chad Bianco, has been an outspoken advocate for this fraud investigation and ballot seizure, which has faced several legal challenges, including from California Attorney General Rob Bonta, who requested the intervention from the state Supreme Court. Other legal challenges have come from four local voters who filed with the California Supreme Court for Bianco to return the ballots and accused him of violating state election laws that require ballots to remain with election officials. University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA's Voting Rights Project also filed a lawsuit stating that the seizure was illegal. Part of UCLA's Voter Rights Project is Democratic gubernatorial candidate and former state attorney Xavier Becerra. Riverside County Sheriff's investigator Robert Castellanos requested the three search warrants, which were signed by the judge. The seizure of more than 1,000 boxes of ballots in February and March were detailed in the warrants, but did not provide an exact number of ballots seized. The March warrant states that deputies went through about 22 boxes that contained approximately 12,561 ballots. Officials with the Riverside County Registrar of Voters have rejected any claims of voter fraud, with the Registrar of Voters, Art Tinoco, describing in a public presentation on February 10th that, quote, the actual gap is 103 votes, well within the state-mandated margin of error and attributable to human error by fatigued election workers, end quote. On March 29th, Bianco announced that the investigation was placed on hold due to, quote, politically motivated lawsuits and court filings, end quote. According to California law, county officials are required to keep election materials sealed for 22 months for elections for a federal office and 6 months for all other contests. Because the Prop 50 election took place on November 4th, ballots are scheduled to be destroyed in May. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.
On Wednesday evening, April 8th, Old Growth Sellers in Eureka hosted the Humboldt County Republican Party meet and greet for local, statewide, and national offices. The candidates included Audrey Hanks for Humboldt County Assessor, David Fennell, and David Hollenberg, who are both running for California Lieutenant Governor, David Serpa for California Treasurer, Paul Salisbury and Robin Latow, who are both running for California's 2nd Congressional District, and Chad Bianco, the Riverside County Sheriff, who is running for California Governor. The event was attended by Humboldt County Sheriff William Hansel, who Chad Bianco thanked. Bianco was talking about not receiving President Donald Trump's endorsement, saying that endorsements from every sheriff in the state is more important than the endorsement of the president.
I have the endorsement of your wonderful sheriff, who was one of the first sheriffs in the entire state a year and a half ago when I said that I was thinking of doing this. He was right there saying, absolutely, you have to, and I'll be behind you the whole way. So when you have the endorsement of every sheriff in the state, the highest elected official in every county, I don't want to make our president mad, but that's a better endorsement than somebody that can't even vote for me, because I know Billy can vote for me.
The event was mainly for Chad Bianco, who spent over 40 minutes talking about his goals and plans if he is voted in as governor. He started out by challenging all Republicans in the room, calling for a change in approach to get Republicans into office.
Government is supposed to have intended purpose, and we're taking it back to that. So number one, I'll make it easy, I have to go backwards a little bit, but there are four things. The fourth is over-encompassing, and it has to do with the quality of life. Quality of life is our cost of living, our taxes, all of those things. So just so you know, I'm going to get to that. That's all the good stuff. But number one, I can do anything I want with all of those. I can lower everything. I can make it super, super cheap to live here. If it's not safe, none of you are going to want to live here. Public safety is the number one role of any government. The federal government is supposed to keep us safe from foreign invaders, and local government is supposed to keep us safe from criminals. And that is their sole responsibility, number one responsibility, and we are going to take that back to California. Crime is actually going to be a crime again. We are going to punish people who victimize us. They are going to go to jail, and they're going to go to prison. The six prisons that have been closed will all be reopened, and we are going to fill them with people who victimize us.
When talking about his goals for governor, Bianco first focused on public safety.
Number two is our infrastructure. Infrastructure is the number two responsibility of government, and infrastructure is our roadways, our decrepit roadways, our power supply, whether it be electricity, natural gas, those types of things, our waterways, all of those things, buildings, whether it's government buildings, whether it's hospitals, all of those bridges, anything, whatever it is, transportation, that's government's number two responsibility, and we have not done that here in California for decades.
He claimed the California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, are responsible for the electrical rate increase, not the power companies, promising to replace the CPUC commission, and said he would be able to cut electricity rates in half, and as governor, he would transition California to nuclear power. He then argued that California has never had a drought, and actually receives more than enough rain and snow, blaming the government for intentionally routing 70% of usable water into the ocean, citing the importance of dams, promising he will bring them all back.
Power is king in California. We have to have power. Water is just as important. I probably don't even have to tell all of you. California has never suffered a drought, ever. We have more water every single year in rain and snow than any other state in the country. And by design, a minimum of 70% of that water gets purposely routed straight to the ocean. So we don't use it. We have a government-created problem, so the government can tell you we have a drought, so the government control how much water you use and how much you're going to pay for it. We do not have a water issue in this state. We have a water savings issue. We don't save our water. We have to start building the dams and the reservoirs that we voted for 13 years ago. That nothing has been done since then except remove four dams. Four dams have been removed since we told them to build more. I promise you, they are all going to be built. We know where they have to be built. It's already been decided where they belong. The reason we don't have them is because environmental activists control this state. And if we put those dams in the places where those dams are supposed to be, so we will never ever wonder whether we will have nothing but 100% of the water that we need. Those dams are being prevented from being built because when that water goes in there, the environmental activists are more concerned about the weeds and the bugs instead of you and your family's lives. It's ridiculous what our government has become, controlled by activism. And we have to send somebody there that actually has the ability, the power, and the guts to tell them, no, we are no longer doing this.
His third goal was education, giving statistics about reading levels in the public school system, and finishing with transgender fear-mongering.
Number three is education. We have failed a couple of generations of kids. We failed to make them responsible adults. If your kids are responsible, thank God, and thank God to you, because you are the ones that did it. It didn't come from our public school systems. Our kids have not been trained and taught how to be productive adults and enter the workforce. 50% of our kids are not at grade level in reading. 35% is all, that's how many kids are proficient in science and math. 65% are not proficient in science and math. We are going to actually teach them how to think for themselves again, how to do math, how to write, how to read, science, all of those things. But more importantly, I am going to force into every single school district the reintroduction of trades into our education system. We will teach. It's not all about college. Yes, some need to go to college. Some have different things that they have to learn. Everyone doesn't have to go to college just to get saddled with debt to get a job that you can't afford the debt with. We can teach them how to be productive with their hands. We can teach them how to be farmers. We can teach them how to be ranchers. We can teach them how to be electricians, mechanics, air conditioning, all of those things that we need that left a long, long time ago. We need that back, and that's how we're going to be productive to stimulate our economy anyway. But I will promise you this as your governor. There will never, ever again be another boy in your daughter's locker room.
He finished by thanking Sheriff William Hansel and pointing out he is a better candidate than Steve Hilton, who received President Trump's endorsement. This is the first installment of KMUD covering this meeting. There will be more coverage on the other candidates moving forward, and looking at Bianco's answers to questions from the crowd and more sources looking at the claims. This is Gabriel Zucker with KMUD.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Nat Cardos, and Gabriel Zucker. KMUD News is online. You can find us at kmud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media, including Facebook and Instagram. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. I'd also like to remind folks before the end of our broadcast that our spring membership drive is April 13th to the 22nd. Please click the donate button on kmud.org. Your donations help keep our local news on air. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, a national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.